So, we are going to continue with defining, no, no, not yet.
No, no.
Post-implantation review, IFRS 30.
Okay, all right, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me again, presenting to you now Agenda Paper 7, which considers the response period for the request for information for the PIR, or post-implementation review of IFRS 13 fair value measurement, and also considers or explains how the due process was completed in the first phase of the PIR of IFRS 13. A summary of the board's decisions to date are included in paragraphs 2 and 3 of the paper, and the due process recommends that a minimum of 28 would be a little odd, for the responses for the RFI, the staff recommends that this response period for the RFI would have a minimum of 120 days, which would anticipate hopefully having the RFI ready in May of 2017, which would mean a deadline for responses of September 2017. Now I would like to ask the first question to the board. Do you agree with the staff's recommendation to allow for a minimum 120-day response period for the RFI of IFRS 13 PIR?
That seems very long, doesn't it, after this morning's discussion?
We are following due process.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That detail.
Okay, shall we agree?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, so you mean 120 days, right? Not a minimum, like 180.
Yeah. No, I mean, sometimes there's the odd extra day because of weekends or whatever. Exactly. But,
so that was, in Hugh's absence, that was all in favor?
All in favor.
All right, great. Thank you very much. And now we will move on to the review of the due process steps taken and that were followed. So the due process steps in a PIR include establishing a timetable as well as establishing a scope of the PIR and deciding next steps. So in January 2017, the board decided that the next steps of this PIR would be to issue a request for information, which would focus on the effectiveness of disclosures, the unit of account and fair value measurement of quoted investments, as well as the application of judgment and the application of the highest and best use when measuring non-financial assets. In addition, a PIR can also explore other things, and the board may consider additional activities to supplement any information or outreach. So the appendix of this paper has further detail on the completion of these steps. So I would now like to ask the last question of this paper to the board. Question 2, are you satisfied that all mandatory due process steps required were completed during the first phase of the PIR?
Yes.
Yes.
All in favor.
All in favor.
Great, thank you very much.
So then we are now going to define our businesses.
Thank you.
Leonardo.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Agenda paper 13 summarizes the feedback received on the proposed amendment to the definition of a business included in the disclosure draft definition of a business and accounting for previous held interest issued by the SB in June 2016. We received 80 comment letters and discussed this proposed amendment with ASAF members and GPF members. All the feedback received are summarized in this paper. In general, we can say that most respondents agreed with the proposed amendment to the definition of a business. In particular, there is support for the board proposal to clarify that a business must include, at a minimum, an input and a substantive process that together contribute to the ability to create outputs. There is also support for the board proposal to narrow the definition of output to focus on goods and services provided to customers, investment income, and other revenues. However, a few respondents asked the board to clarify the term other revenues as part of the definition of outputs. There is also support for the proposed guidance on identifying a substantive process. However, some respondents observe that the assessment on whether a substantive process exists may be complex to apply. They suggest simplifying this guidance. The suggestions received are summarized in paragraph 21 of the paper. A few respondents observe that the new guidance on substantive process may be inconsistent with the presence of goodwill as a separate indicator that the acquiree is a business. Some suggesting deleting the presence of goodwill as a separate indicator. There is also support for the proposal to clarify that an acquired outsourcing agreement may be considered to provide access to an organized workforce that performs a substantive process. However, some respondents ask for more guidance on this topic. There is also overall support for the proposed illustrative examples. However, some respondents observe that the examples should be improved. Some suggest the SB to further align the wording of the example with the wording of the FASB examples. Others ask the SB to provide additional examples. Some respondents provided specific drafting comments in order to clarify the examples. The main comments received on the examples are in paragraph 23 of the paper. Last but not least is the proposal to consider a set of assets not to be a business if the fair value of the gross assets acquired is concentrated in a single asset or a group of similar assets. According to the exposure draft, if substantially all the fair value of the asset acquired is concentrated in a single asset, further assessment of whether a substantive process exists is not required. In other words, we are proposing a determining screening test. This is the most commented issue. Some respondents noted that the proposed screening test is rule-based and may sometimes result in an inappropriate conclusion. In their view, the screening test might lead to a conclusion that a set of assets is not a business, even if it would be considered a business applying the guidance on substantive process. Consequently, they suggest a different solution, for example, by changing it into an indicator or a rebuttable presumption or an optional test. Other comments on the screening test, including the request to clarify the term similar assets and the request to clarify whether the fair tax asset and the fair tax liability should be considered in performing the proposed screening test. Regarding the convergence with FASB amendments, most respondents suggested the ISB and the FASB to reach convergent solution on the respective proposed amendments and use similar or the same wording whenever possible in order to avoid divergence in practice. Today we are not asking for any decision at this meeting, but we all only ask you whether you have comments, initial reaction or questions on the feedback received. Thank you.
Mary?
I'll kick off with a couple of thoughts, and I apologize in advance to staff because I'm kind of throwing you what I would say is a hot potato without having a lot of suggestions for how to deal with it. The first reaction I had thinking about this summary is that it was more negative than I had hoped for in terms of people saying the level of disagreement with specific aspects. For example, is the screening test absolute? You know, a number of people saying make it indicative, but that is inconsistent with the reason we put it in as a simplification, and I think we would have seen it as a complication if it were an alternative assessment method. That, and I'm just bringing that up as an example. I know I found when we were working on it that this was a very dense document. It was very difficult to dive in and deal with these pieces when you weren't working across the whole of IFRS 3. And I found it took a long time to understand the significance of individual words because we were going in and making some changes here, some changes here, some changes here. It was all around the same issue, but it was scattered in several places. So I think one question I'd like the staff to think about, welcome first responses, but I think about in terms of developing a project plan is, do we have to do more to go back maybe to some of the people who provided feedback and make sure that we have fully explained why we did things in certain ways and do, you know, if we have more of that dialogue, not with every one of the 80 plus who did it, but on some of the more significant points, because I know Michael spent a lot of time with me when we were developing the drafting to try and say this is why it's this here and that here. You know, it's the whole scarce and unique versus, I can't think of what the other phrase was in terms of the process, and see if we get any different feedback before we decide how to go, because I think this level of disagreement with some of the more significant aspects makes me pause and say, are we getting enough bang for the buck in terms of enough agreed clarification versus the effort of opening this up? Yeah, that's just something I think we have to weigh. The second is, as you report, Leo, at the end, there's a lot of support generally for maintaining convergence with the FASB. And I think that's easier to support as an abstract principle than it is in terms of the different areas. One complication is that FASB has already finalized, and I can't remember, I think they've published even,
yes,
their final amendments. So, you know, on the one hand, people who say that are saying, basically at this point, saying to us, either you give up what you proposed and revert to what the FASB has already published if you want convergence. And yet, I think some of the comments that they made on the specific areas do not go in the direction of convergence in what the FASB published. So I think we might need, as you bring recommendations on each section, have insight into whether what we proposed was different from FASB, and how the FASB has finalized it. And then the third comment I had, which is more a specific issue, but it kind of feeds into my is about the goodwill test, but it feeds into kind of my first comment about, are we confident that we were clear enough in terms of communicating exactly why we did certain things? Because my recollection of the comment about the presence of goodwill is we weren't setting it out as a test. We were just making a statement that it was not an indicate, you know, and that basically we're saying, don't look at it this way. And we had several comments back about, why did you put it in at this step? Isn't it validating? Which suggests to me that perhaps our communication wasn't clear enough, because we were not trying to introduce the presence or absence of goodwill as a test to determine whether or not you have a business. At least that's my correct recollection. It's been a number of months since we've looked at it. So I think there are challenges, and I'm disappointed not with the document, not with the staff, not with our stakeholders, but just wondering if it's as clear as just start grinding through the comments as the next step, because of all these different pieces around it.
I was also a bit surprised that some examples seem to be apparent. And I'd also be interested to know, given that the FASB have already been through their deliberations and concluded, whether or not they got the sort of we don't like the rule type feedback as well, or was it something that was from our stakeholders? So were there any circumstances that the rules seemed to give funny answers that would worry us?
I don't think so. FASB received similar comment on this issue, and they discussed the screening test in August, and they decided to keep the screening test determinative. Many commentators do an example to explain the problem of the screening test. The example is the acquisition of a shopping mall plus a substantive process. They say this is acquisition of a business, but if I apply the screening test and the fair value of the shopping mall is very significant, and the fair value of the process is significant, I recognize this acquisition as an acquisition of assets. I don't think that in this situation, accounting this acquisition as an acquisition of assets is not appropriate. Because if we see the real difference between business combination accounting and asset acquisition, which is the difference for us? That in business combination, I have to recognize the deferred tax liabilities and the corresponding amount of goodwill. This is the main difference between business combination and asset acquisition. And many people, I remember when I did the post-implementation review of IFRS 3, many participants to the post-implementation review of RS3 told me this is not real goodwill, this is accounting goodwill, because it's only the corresponding amount of the deferred tax liability. So I think if I recognize this transaction as an asset acquisition, this is the best accounting. The other difference is acquisition cost, but I don't think this is a significant difference.
So I think maybe just building on that a little bit, I think one of the things that we can look at when we bring this back is to say, well, what are the consequences of so-called getting the wrong answer? And Leo's really just described in his example what the key difference would be, which is, do you or don't you recognise deferred tax? That's the consequence, because we're looking at a situation where we've already concluded, or the company's already concluded, that substantially all of the fair value is in a single asset. So when you then sort of look at that in the context of materiality as well, that the one difference that there, I think there would be potentially, is the deferred tax recognition.
The FASB be proceeded with it, even though they also got concerns raised about it being rule-based. So the idea that it was a simplification still sort of won over.
Yes.
Yeah. That is the same point. Actually, there are lots of complaints about screening tests. Although we say it's a simplification in order to reduce the burden of the preparer, however, their reaction is it's going to increase their job. And sometimes the outcome is not explainable. And the example you raised. So therefore, I think it's a kind of matter of rule based of or judgment basis. And actually, in my understanding, it's quite difficult to just force this rule to every circumstance. Because I read the BC in the exposure draft, and in the exposure draft, BC 19 says the board expects that usually the fair value of substantive process would be more than insignificant, blah, blah, blah. So therefore, if I read the BC, the board has, in a sense, assumption that in usual circumstances, it would be like this. But it didn't address if it were not like that. So therefore, in this sense, rebuttable presumption approach would work well to me. So therefore, maybe during the course of the deliberation, we need to discuss whether rebuttable presumption approach would work better or not. And I was wondering at the same point, would it cause a divergence with USCF or not?
Yes.
The judgment is necessary, which is important for ISB to cause a divergence or to make a workable solution.
Yeah, I think I'd also say, and obviously we'll bring this as part of our further analysis, but with a rebuttable presumption, there's still a requirement on the entity to work through whether that presumption is rebutted. And one of the objectives here was to simplify the process. I think we would then not achieve that objective.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Questions? No? Okay. Thank you.